You're listening to The People's Pitch, the official podcast of Minneapolis City Soccer Club, brought to you by Football Stadium Prince. Let's start the show.
And as I talked about just a couple minutes ago, as Joe Watt stands over this one, he appears to be the one taking the penalty here. This is a huge confidence booster if you're a Duluth.
Worst case Elder scenario for City right here.
And it stopped!
Yes!
And it stopped!
Totally redeems himself.
Matt Elder redeeming himself. Oliver with the right foot. The shot is
goal! Oliver!
Justin Oliver will break the scoreless tie. And it is 1-0 Minneapolis City. It's Hutton now on the offense with the left foot.
Another goal!
It is now 2-0 Minneapolis City.
Good finish.
Nick Hutton taking his quick victory lap.
Hello there, soccer friends. This is the People's Pitch Podcast, the official podcast of your Minneapolis City Soccer Club. I'm your host, John, and with me is my friend, my partner, my booth mate, the Nate Morales. Nate, so much soccer has happened since we last spoke. Today is really just going to be a recap of what we saw, hitting the highlights, the lowlights, and just talking about how we move forward. How are you doing, pal? I got a lot of thoughts.
I'm feeling better after this week. I think, you know, winning is good for the soul. Like you said, it's good for the club, at least a couple of the teams, to keep the stink of losing off themselves. And it feels, I'm feeling a little more positive about the season already. Going into this 4th of July break, like you said, we're going to go game by game through what was a very busy week for Minneapolis City.
Day by day.
Lots of home matches, which is good for the fans. Sioux Falls from last Wednesday. We're going to talk about Peoria from Saturday. We went to St. Louis Park. We were at Joy of the People. The Futures were in the UPSL Midwest West Final. And then we'll talk about last night's game against FC Manitoba. So, yep, a lot of soccer to talk about. Let's get to it.
Yep, let's go.
Well, we've said it before. This time it feels like it's stuck. This was the time to start winning. Our home game against Sioux Falls last Wednesday was the beginning of a stretch of NPSL games that we marked on the calendar as exceptionally winnable.
Doable.
And the game, yeah, the game started all City. I think you and I agree that midfield pairing of Samuel Ruiz Plaza and Aiden Kavanaugh, they were really, really good. And at the 10-minute mark, Kavanaugh notched another goal in this season. I think that he's grown really well into. He's kind of come into his own as the season has worn on. That's a couple goals in a couple weeks for Aiden Kavanaugh. But City became more and more disconnected as the second half began. We had that 1-0 lead into the 65th minute when Sioux Falls pulled the goal back off of the head of Ethan Glissendorf. And that was strangely, and I'm interested to get your take, but strangely, that is when City became more defensive. I think it's in a coaching move that I'm not totally behind. Getting tied on, 1-1, the 1-1 scoreline was followed by moves that were defensive in nature. Club subbed Samo and Aiden off for Tyler David and Eli Lloyd. And tactically, I'm not really sure what that call was about. And then I don't think the guys on the field entirely knew what that was about, because the ensuing play for the next, 10, 15 minutes felt kind of like a free-for-all where, Abdu Ragasa, who started as the forward, played the full 90 minutes. He's found tracking back, defending deep. Tyler David, who is brought on as a defensive midfielder, ends up supporting on forward runs, probably running more than than he has in a long time. And I was just like, this felt like total chaos, right?
Yeah. So there's a couple trains of thought here. Number one is when you are at the death and you are leading, there's a potential for you to potentially move a win to a draw or a draw to a loss and drop points, you immediately look to bring on more defensive players to kind of lock stuff down. So that's one thought. The competing thought is because the opponent is throwing everything at you, you do still need to have those central creative players that can solve problems in tight spaces to be able to get out of that. And then you hit on the counter when they're with your, you know, your speedier, more attacking minded players that are still on the field. And then the game gets stretched and then it becomes an advantage for you. And then maybe you get that third or fourth goal, which is what we saw happen, but it only happened because of the fact that there really was nobody back besides one player for Sioux Falls. But yeah. I agree with you. I think the substitution patterns and the personnel that came on, I don't think that I think that the Tyler David inclusion was fine. I think he did his job there. Moving Sa, who was, you know, physically being outmatched by some of the bigger players, moving him from an outside position where the damage is limited if he gets knocked off the ball, it's fine having him out there, because we want him to do his stuff on the attacking end, and he did, setting up that goal. But moving him into the middle where like the bodies are banging and like you know the potential to get knocked off the ball in a bad spot is really high. It's really high, and the impact is also high. That was an interesting move for me. I think it was erased. The negatives of it were erased by the positives of him setting up that back-breaking goal.
Despite all that, John, City ground out that win. Like you said, Ragasa ends up making a run forward, potentially where he was supposed to be, potentially out of the position that he moved into. I'm not sure, hard to say. His low cross, this is another interesting point to me, that his low cross found Matt Murakami at the front post. That's our right back who ended up at the front post of on a cross.
Well, that was that when I'm talking about getting the game getting stretched, because then it like the overload of all the players for Sioux Falls being on the offensive end on one side of the field, it sprung Murakami, and he was smart in recognizing that, like, I actually need to go forward and not worry about defending, because we can kind of lock this one up if I get there. And he did.
And then Susie puts the game away shortly thereafter. He had a nice, really, really nice individual effort, dribbling past, kind of powering through, almost losing possession of the ball, and just calmly slotting one past the keeper in a 1v1 situation there, John. Three, like you said, 3-2 or 3-1 victory. Wait, 3-2 victory. Sorry. As Sioux Falls pulls one back late off of the foot of really nice free kick from Baraka. Really nice goal from long distance from Baraka.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a really nice goal.
City's able to gut one out, and all that weirdness is hard to focus on when we win.
Yeah, absolutely. So as far as standout performers go, I mean, I think you could easily point to the central pairing of Ruiz Plaza and Aiden Kavanaugh. But I'm going to go with Matt Murakami. We talked about just him throughout the season as like the steady Eddie, right? The presence that you can count on at a left or right back position. But what he's added to his game this year is goal scoring, which is something that like you don't get a ton out of historically from our outside defenders in the city camp, but he's adding that, and it's not only just that he's scoring goals, they are vital, important goals to keep the heartbeat going. So to me, Murakami is a standout performer. But overall, that win felt good. You know, we needed to keep that momentum rolling, into the Joy of the People match, because of it's kind of a redemption game, not only for this season, but as a result of last season, them ending our ability to go undefeated. When we were really just like that game last year was just a celebration of trophies. And we were like, oh, we have to play a game today. and they had planned all year for that game. So it was really good, to keep that forward momentum going into the Joy game with a win, which we'll talk about in a second. But first, we're going to go off normal script and we're going to jump around leagues here. So let's go back to, let's go to the USL2 to talk about the Peoria home game. I was out of pocket. So for listeners, I did not get a chance to see what had happened with the Peoria or Joy game until much later. So Nate, you're going to have to carry the load on this one.
Yeah, I covered this one by myself in the booth. The USL 2 squad came out at home against Peoria in that 3-4-3 or that 5-2-3, however you want to look at it. And you and I are going to talk more about this in a bit when we talk about Manitoba, but I'm not loving that formation, not loving it. defensively, Peoria had it figured out almost immediately. It's, I think, two side to side, in my opinion, for a group that already plays that way. And it eliminates a lot of creativity through the middle, unfortunately. Peoria ends up winning this one, John, on the shoulders of their big New England Revolution 2 product forward, Tim Ennin, who scored both goals. That guy looked really good. He was not in the squad the other two times we played them. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say this game was punctuated by not a lot of urgency in the Minneapolis City attack. It was really hard for the midfield pairing of Jameson Charles and Joey Tawa to get the ball forward. It wasn't working through the wings. Another odd point is that Aiden O'Driscoll was played as, I believe, the left winger in that game, which is strange, out of position for him. It felt like I expected him a little bit to just kind of tuck back and play more an attacking midfield role, but he did not. So that was interesting. It wasn't until late subs injected some creativity into the match through Aiden Kavanaugh, Loic Masanmi, Jacek Nikowski, that Jameson Charles was able to do something that we saw last night. And he unlocked that ability to play both dimensions of his game, both defensively and offensively. Through balls were more prolific once those guys came on. And some of the themes that we can come back to when we talk about the Manitoba, some of these themes we can come back to in the Manitoba chat, but this USL2 attack looked like it needed an injection of something, and it really was that Kavanaugh, Masanvi, Nikowski, young talent, relatively young, everyone's young, damn it, but relatively, I guess, young, unproven talent, except for Masanvi, coming into the game late.
Well, my thoughts are, when you talk about like a 3-4-3 formation, what you're really missing is you're missing Will Kidd, you're missing Kevin Andrews, you're missing the players that aren't here anymore, that are the ones that can, you know, and no disrespect to the players that are put in those like out those wide wing back type positions, but you're missing those guys that are equally as dangerous on the offensive end from a goal scoring perspective, a chance creation perspective, mm-hmm. that than they are on the willingness to come back and defend perspective. So instead you're subbing in a player like Wes Lawrence, who throws the kitchen sink and empties his tank every single game, but he doesn't have like the goal scoring prowess that someone like a Will Kidd did of the past to be able to do that work. So the formation change, and we'll talk about it more when we get into the Manitoba game because it's fresher, but it's real tough to adjust the formation at this point in the season, specifically against a team like Peoria, which we have seen is well coached in understanding how to exploit a team's weakness. I saw it against the Des Moines Menace when they played them. I saw it against us in the second time we played them. Mm-hmm. I saw it against when they played the Legends. Like all the games I watch with Peoria, they're just very, very good at understanding, okay, here's how we want to come out, but we're actually going to come out in kind of a base system and then figure out as quickly as possible where the gaps are, where the weaknesses are in what the opponents are throwing at us and exploit it. And that's what they do really well. And that's what they did to us. And it's an unfortunate one. You know, the individual effort of Tim, we'll just call him Tim. The individual efforts of Tim for Peoria City that's something that it's tough to come back from, because yeah. I thought that by and large, like there were bright spots for Minneapolis City, but it was all negated by the fact that they had an individual performer who just stepped up on the day.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if it weren't for him, it would have been potentially a draw, a little different game. I don't think Minneapolis City looked like they would have been threatening on the attack at all, you know, if anything, if he was out. But like you said, Peoria had all the answers, right? If we were mm-hmm. if we were trying to go wide up the wings, then Peoria knew how to defend it. If we tried to play through to like an Eli Goldman trying to make a run up the middle, their goalkeeper Vargas was playing a super high line and was able to cut out those through balls. It gave Eli no space behind the back line to chase the ball down. So it was a little frustrating. I think, like you said, maybe a draw would have been nice, but 2-0 looked like what we deserved. But then I jumped in the car and I headed across town to catch the last few minutes of that Joy of the People Minneapolis City game in St. Louis Park. This one was getting wrapped up by the time I got there. I think I got there about 65th minute, maybe 70th minute. But from what I heard and what I saw, it had its moments. In this game, it's important to note that Joy was on something like 3 red cards, maybe 4.
On the day. Yeah.
They didn't have center back Noah Kantorowicz. They were missing, I think, one of their number one players, midfielder Bennett Kwame, from accumulation. And I think it's like David Riera.
Yeah, David Riera
was also out. So they were down a few key players. And then Tucker Mann collides with an onrushing Vang, and he drew a red. I think that from what I heard in the crowd, people thought it was kind of a soft foul or didn't agree with it, that he had maybe Vang had
put was a he out bit of the box. Heavy,
he was out of the box. He had put a little bit of a heavy touch on it and was hoping to get around Mann, you know, with a dribble, but instead Mann just ran right into him.
I mean, 9 times out of 10, the call goes to the attacker on that one. Yeah. Because the goalkeeper's leaving his box. If it's inside the box, yeah, there's a little bit more room for interpretation of like, it was just a goalkeeper trying to make a play. But when you're outside your box, the goalkeeper, and traditionally goalkeepers aren't like the most fleet-footed players. That's why they're in goal. things look awkward, and even the perceived slightest of collisions might look worse because typically your goalkeeper is like 9 feet tall. So when you're lining yeah. bang and you're going in against a tall player like that, like it just looks worse than it probably was.
Yeah, and I think that unluckily for Joy and Tucker Mann, that was all we needed to. You know, Lionel Vang lines up and it's Vanger time, baby. he buries that free kick.
Well, I think that, like, let's talk about Joy for just a second. Like, you look at the progression from year one to year two, and we talked about them post-conception when they started and talking about like how they're going to translate into this league, what their calling card's going to be as an organization, with, you know, the youth replay model and then translating that into senior soccer at this level. You know, and then we saw what happened last year where they had, I think, a really good healthy mix of veteran players, young up and coming players, some established Division I players going back in. But then you saw like the influx of players leaving to go to more established organizations that mm-hmm. do things a little bit differently. So like their model and their calling card, you know, there's been a shift in that, and they leaned heavily on the youth movement, which I can get behind in year two, but I don't think that they learned still yet how you build a team to win in this league. And I say that with the fact that we're not really winning in this league this year, but we know what to do in the MPSL. We're just stretched across 3 competitions. So with their main focus of having their team, I think they've taken a giant step backwards, which is unfortunate for them as an organization and for the league, because you want that crosstown rival to be as strong as possible so that the games are more exciting. And they've dropped 2 games. This is the first time I think in league history that a single team has lost multiple times to Aris, and in an embarrassing fashion too.
6-1. Yeah.
6-1, 3-0 at home. That's that's a lot of goals to give up to a team that doesn't really do traditionally very well in league. So it stinks that's where they're at as an organization. Then you add on top of that losing 3 players who are kind of what's left from a talent perspective and not being able to be in the game against us. Like they didn't have their full side, and I actually expected it to be more goals, but I think it was an instance of them fighting hard because it was versus us versus maybe a Dakota Fusion or a Sioux Falls Thunder.
Yeah. And I actually thought Joy looked better with 10 men than they did with all 11. Caputo ends up pulling a goal back at the end of the first half, and it's 1-1, and we've got to fight it was strange. This is strange as it is to say this. City had to fight the second half against 10 men to get that goal back. Mm-hmm. And it would be Vang again on a penalty kick. Minneapolis City player brought down in the box, and we were able to see the rest of the game out with some good young talent on the field of our own. Abdu Ragasa had an exceptional game. He was really good on the ball in a position that suited him a little better than a midfielder role with defensive responsibilities. So that was great. So Joy dispatched away. City wins 2-1, and then I would say perhaps the biggest game of the week happened on Tuesday. What day was it? Monday? Monday. It was Monday. The playoff match between two undefeated UPSL squads vying for the Midwest West title. And John, you watched it.
I did. I did watch it. And I texted you. I was like, hey, you might want to turn this one on.
Yeah.
because we're going into overtime. So the game in question that Nate's referencing is the UPSL Midwest West Championship match between Minneapolis City Futures and Valora FC, the only two teams ever to win this conference since its inception. So you're looking at two teams that, you know, historically have done well and, you know, rightfully were in the conversation to be the outright champion of the division, even though Valora also was undefeated and got Minneapolis City on points to win the, I guess, the regular season title, which doesn't mean anything other than playoff seeding, which we're finding out. Am I incorrect with that? Or am I dead on? Like, it actually means nothing as long as you finish in the top four.
Okay. Yeah. I honestly no idea. We've talked about this last season too. Like how many trophies do we get for winning the Midwest West?
You get one, and that's to win the division championship nice. in the tournament. So top four seeds go in. Dakota Young Stars and Valora was just a complete mess. There was, I think, 5 red cards for Dakota in that game, which Yikes. Why would you drive 5 hours to pick up a red card every hour? And then, you know, like what happened there? So that's how Valora was able to dispatch them in the semifinals. Then Minneapolis City coming off the back of another penalty kick shootout this season in the dark. And Noah Hermanson was able to slot home the game winner in penalties to send Minneapolis City in. So you have two of the best teams, arguably, on paper going into this game, and two wildly different makeups. Minneapolis City Futures, mm-hmm. as we know, 16 to 20 year olds. Then you look across the field at Valora and you see, you know, players like Pablo Campos, who was an NASL MVP, who was like a 25 goal scorer a year player at the professional level, who is like, you know, he's older, but he's still mobile and can score goals. And you're like, that guy is now going up against Nick Kent and Tyler Beaupre as our center backs. So you're like, oh, okay, Valora, I see you. You know, you're bringing in the firepower. There was a couple other players that had some higher level playing experience as well. So you're looking at makeups. I thought that as far as the game went, Minneapolis City did the one thing that we don't historically do as a club, and they came out fast. And the start was about as dreamy as it can get, except for the fact that there were no goals to come out of it. But they came out on the front foot and really outplayed Valora. And I think Valora just didn't expect it. And, you know, like I said, traditionally, we don't come out fast like that. We kind of keep the ball a little bit. But the young guys, they got direct. They started looking for opportunities quickly. And it was really causing fits for Valora. But no blood in the first half. You go into the second half. And some substitutions were made by Coach Jeremiah Johnson and the staff to bring on, you know, to inject some more activity. And that was, in my opinion, all done in theory, because I actually thought that the second half subs did not perform as well as the players that they were brought on for in the first mm-hmm. half. So it could have been tired legs, could have been a number of things, but the guys that came on didn't really have that heavy of an impact that I think they were looking for. But they still kept them in the game. But Valora, I think, figured a few things out from the first half, made some adjustments and came out, and they were the strongest team in the second half. So it was kind of like, anywhere will do once we got the ball, and it looked as if we were kind of playing for overtime. Once we got into overtime, it was play not to lose, not to win. And there were a few chances. I think Jordan Ross had probably the best chance where the goalkeeper was beaten, but the ball that went into him was a little heavy and he wasn't able to collect it quick enough and smooth enough to be able to put it in the back of the net. So then you go into penalties and we find out, Nate, that like from a UPSL perspective, that's kind of our thing. Like, yeah. we win penalty shootouts. So hey. We'll do that every time.
I'm cool with that.
Right, exactly. Yeah, they did. You know, you win the game. They don't care how you did it. So we go into penalties. The only actually, it wasn't five. We missed one. Gavin Watkinson hit the post. So we weren't perfect on the day. But who was perfect on the day, in theory, was goalkeeper Evan Siefkin, making some big saves, kind of following in the footsteps of young Ben Schliemann from last year.
Yeah.
Coming in and making those saves to win the title. And there you go. The bright spot on the year for the club continues to be bright. And man, do we need it with everything else that's happening around city headquarters. That win was so massive for many reasons. And they've just done just an incredible job. And I know Jeremiah has a mantra of like create magical memories. And that is one. Like, these guys are never going to forget that. And it's wherever they go off in their lives or their soccer journeys after this season, they're always going to be able to you know, bump into one of their teammates somewhere in the world and talk about the time that they won the UPSL title together.
Yeah, it's really cool to see, John. And next is the big game, the playoff game. Starting in whatever is the more regional playoffs, and that's coming up this week.
Yeah, so this Saturday, July 2nd, 3 p.m., up in Blaine at NSC against Chicago Nation, who took out my boys, the Bavarians, 1-0 in the semifinal. Did get a little bit of intel from those old friends, and they basically just said that they were playing in three competitions in 3 days, so they ran into the same problem that we do, where you got to beg, borrow, and steal to put a team out there, and it wasn't the best one. But they did say that like Chicago Nation played good enough to win the game, and you know, hats off to them. But that's who we match up against again Saturday, July 2nd, 3 p.m. up in Blaine at the NSC. It will be a ticketed event, so do yourself a favor, get out there and support these guys if you don't have holiday plans. These are your holiday plans now. And take care of your tickets ahead of time. Do yourself a favor on that one, and take care of tickets ahead of time so you don't have to worry about it. But definitely make the trip up there.
Yeah, super fun. It would have been really cool to go up against the Bavarians in the playoffs.
Yeah, it was funny because I was talking to Patrick and he's like, yeah, 4th of July weekend trip to Minnesota was not what I was really looking forward to.
What? Okay, fine.
He's like, I'll play you guys at any time. I love you guys, but I don't know if I would have been able to make that one work.
Would have been tough. And hopefully, you know, since we're the hometown team, hopefully Chicago also has a tough time pulling some kids together that want to come up over the 4th of July weekend. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
USL 2, John, we're hoping to capture some of those winning ways. That's three wins for Minneapolis City clubs in a week. And FC Manitoba was in town, so USL2 was thinking, man, maybe we can get some of that juice rubbed off on us. But they came out in the same 3-4-3 that we talked about and had the same problems. I think City started with what was working at the end of that Peoria game, though. Jacek and Loic started in rather than on the bench. They started on the forward line. And to me, this game came down to two things. It came down to Manitoba goalkeeper Evan Barker making save after save.
Oh, man, he was massive.
Yeah, really, massive. Really big for them. And it came down to City waiting until the chips were really down to crank up the intensity and finally get a goal.
Yeah, absolutely. So how this one like kind of unfolded, our talking point as key to victory was avoid the lulls. And from the 26th minute to the 30th minute was the massive lull. And it was on the back of some real bright spots for Minneapolis City. I think there were three chances created. We talked about Barker coming up big, but there was an open goal that Yasik missed. There was another instance where he had the opportunity to play the ball to Luik, who was open. You know, some shots fired wide. Mm-hmm. It was just like, what's the code? What do we punch into the keypad here to unlock this? And then what Manitoba did is the same thing that Peoria did. They figured out where the weak spots were in the adjusted formation that Sydney was playing on the day, and they exploited it for those 4 minutes. And those 4 minutes defined the entire rest of the game. And those 4 minutes started to grow in frustration for the players on the field for City, because I don't know if it's a personnel thing, but like, they're all smart, good enough soccer players to figure out how to like play within the game. But what was happening was, and we mentioned on the broadcast, is with the personnel that we had out there running that formation, we had you have to make two choices, specifically in the central part of the field, where you lose a man advantage in there. So your players have to make some critical choices. And those two players that kind of pivot next to each other, one has to go forward and one has to stay back. It can never, it's never both forward, both back, because what happens is if they're both forward, it creates that gap in front of three players, and then your man advantage goes away, and your ability to equalize attacking numbers goes away. And that happened many, many times. And then the other side is, if you are then hanging back collectively, there's that gap in the middle of the field. And then no matter how active your front three are, your only outlet is your attacking outside wingbacks. And what that also does is it stretches your formation and it takes another player out of that area and then creates a different gap. So I think there was imbalance in gaps all over the field, and Manitoba figured out how to unlock that. But we also talked about too that, and this will be my last point, we also talked about too, and how the activity that saw us create all those chances in the beginning of the game, when the 31st minute struck on the clock and we were down 2-0, everyone hung their head and that movement stopped. And that was critical, because that was the only way for us to play out of it, was to keep that movement going and put the pressure on a back line for Manitoba that had just played 90 minutes the day before. So like, it was a bunch of things that added up to this one that got us where we are. And I'll pause there, and then I have some final thoughts on how the game ended.
Yeah, I mean, I think everything you've said, you know, we covered on the stream yesterday. I'm wondering if after some reflection overnight, you know, there's really any additional takeaways for you. For me, it's, and I think I hinted at this at the end of the broadcast. Look, we've got two games left in this USL2 season. They're both home games, and we've seen game in and game out when the team gets dynamic. And when the team gets dynamic, John, is when you throw in guys like Susi, Loic, Yasik all together, right? Play the guys. At this point, you've got an entire season of evidence of who will just buzz around the field, even if tactically the team isn't sure what to do, or even if tactically the team goes out in a formation that they're not familiar with, or whatever, right? So, you know what? Screw it. Throw in the guys that can score goals. Throw in the guys that can make something happen on the ball. Throw in the guys that are going to be creative, and see what happens, because you only got two games left.
Yeah. And I mean, speaking of Susi, he did come on. I thought he was bright when he came on.
Yep. It
ended up pulling one back in the 93rd minute. And the reason why we were in the
93rd, oh my God, minute, 10 minutes.
there were 10 minutes of stoppage time added to this game, because every single time a ball went out of bounds, another player from Peoria went down with cramps.
Manitoba,
Manitoba, excuse me, went down with cramps. And I'll say it like it is. About 50% of that time was legitimate time wasting that was like, come on. And then the other 50% of the time was legitimate cramps, because these guys had run their legs dry. And so I get it, but we talked about it also on the broadcast that like, if you're the team that's doing that, you know what you're doing and you're doing it, there's a reason behind it. But when you're the team that it's being done to, you get so mad because you know what's happening, you know, what's working, you can't get into a flow. And that's what we talked about, giving credit to the referees for adding that much stoppage time. The only time I've ever seen more minutes of stoppage time was when Christian Eriksen almost died during the Euros.
Yeah.
On the field. Like, literally, I've never seen that much time added on. So at that point, then, like, we had all this extra time. We knew sense of urgency had to grow because there was a defined, like, large chunk of time where we had to figure it out. And what did we see? Passion, fire, like, energy, like, forward movement. Like getting guys in the attacking areas of the field. But, and we talked about, where was that from that 31st minute until the 93rd minute? Like, that there was just this large gap where it was like no one had any ideas to solve stuff except for let's just try to not get scored on again.
Yeah. Yep. And then once, like I said, that bit of intensity there, the last 15 minutes of the game, like, you really would have liked to see that early.
Oh, and Loic had that last chance that Barker just I don't know how he got a fingertip on that and to keep it from going out at literally inside the 6-yard box. So there was an opportunity to pull level. There really was. And it would have been Loic pulling us out of the garbage can again single-handedly. we talked about once you get the stink on you, it's kind of hard to get the stink off, and there's still a smell in the air, Nate. But we have the opportunity with two games left, a little bit of a holiday break. Maybe hit the lakes, go to the cabins, hit the refresh button, and see if these guys can come back and salvage. Let's just work on getting 3 points out of the next two. Let's not get the goose egg in the win column. But
I think totally doable.
Yeah, totally doable. So head on over to our social channels. Check out the details that will be posted for those games coming up. I believe we have a midweek game again next week. And let's hope for the best. But that does it for us this week, Nate. Thank you for listening to this week's show, folks. And thank you to our wonderful show sponsor, footballstadiumprints.com. If you're in the market for just cool soccer stuff, mugs, t-shirts, prints, right now, footballstadiumprints.com is running a sale. So head on over there and check it out. And remember that all orders ship right from the United States. And so there's no pesky shipping charges. And you can use the promo code CROWS10. That's CROWS10 for 10% off of everything you purchase. And always, as a reminder, Minneapolis City is a 501c3. So consider getting that tax deductible donation in to a truly city-focused organization. And if you're interested in getting a hold of us, we've made it pretty simple. You can hit up the club on Twitter at MPLSCitySC, or you can hit up the show, still no one's done it, at The People's Pitch on Twitter, or via email mcscpodcast@gmail.com. That is all we got this week, folks. We got a big game coming up on Saturday, July 2nd. The Futures hopefully getting that win, going off to the national playoffs. If not, great season for them, and we'll definitely have a full recap if they do not continue, but we hope they do. And then take a quick break, hit the refresh button, folks, and then come on back with us in a week, and let's finish the season out strong. I am John. That was Nate. Have a great Independence Day weekend, and come back hungry for those 3 points. And you got hooked.
Get hooked.
I don't want to get hooked anymore.
all of this hoofing.